Last Thursday, the Federal Communications Commission enacted historic new rules governing broadband technology. The FCC moved to reclassify internet service providers under Title II of the Telecommunications Act. That's an 80-year-old law originally written to regulate telephone companies. Democrats hailed the decision as a victory for open access to the internet and a means to prevent so-called fast lanes for those who could afford to pay for quicker service. Some Republicans criticized the move as increased government control over the internet. Our next two guests today have been watching the issue of net neutrality for a long time and will continue to study it as it unfolds. Dr. Johannes Bauer is chair of the Department of Media and Information here in the College of Communication Arts and Sciences at Michigan State. Welcome, Dr. Bauer.
Good morning, Mark.
And with him is Dr. Steve Wildman, a professor in the same department who holds a unique perspective of the FCC. He served as its chief economist in 2013. Steve Wildman, welcome.
Pleasure to be here, Mark.
Johannes Bauer, explain exactly what the FCC rule said in its decision last Thursday. How, in as simple a terms as possible, how does the ruling speak to the way the internet has evolved?
It is actually a package of provisions that try to safeguard an open and non-discriminatory internet. That's a design principle that was embedded in the engineering of the internet from the very beginning. But it was a choice that was made voluntarily by engineers and computer scientists who were thinking about how to best route traffic over the web. And so by default, then the internet became a very open place where entrepreneurs on the edges of the network did not have to ask permission, where content providers could freely make their content available and it could be accessed by anybody who had the devices to do so. Now, the FCC and other policymakers in the last 10 years thought that this openness of the internet was at risk, mainly because of the different economics of the internet. It has become very, very expensive to upgrade the networks to the higher generation speeds. Content providers need to make a revenue model based on the selling of content and so forth. And the incentives of these players, so was the fear, would be to reduce that openness. So the FCC adopted rules that actually reduce the ability of carriers to discriminate against certain types of content and traffic. It actually made sure that fixed broadband providers and wireless broadband providers are treated the same way. Established rules that carriers could not block traffic, they could not degrade traffic, or they could not prioritize traffic.
This would seem to be good news for internet customers here in Michigan, Steve Wildman. Is it?
Yeah, that's a good question. And if it weren't controversial, we wouldn't be here, obviously. When it comes to issues like no blocking, I don't think people are too concerned about that. And even with the notion of slowing down traffic of certain providers, which is called throttling, there's not a whole lot of controversy about that, except that has been, in some cases, it's been done in the past because some kinds of content have overwhelmed a local network, and therefore you cut back on the people that are doing the overwhelming. But that's been sort of temporary, and it's been addressed pretty much by jawboning on the part of the FCC and public attention. It's a part of paid prioritization that is really probably the most controversial. That it's called a fast lane or prioritization is something that's actually fairly common in economic and in daily life.
Mm-hmm.
That, for example, a provider that wants to get their delivery to a local customer faster will pay FedEx for next morning delivery.
Understood, yeah.
And the Postal Service does the same thing, that you can get, if you're to do a second, third, or fourth class mail deliverer, and you do some of the work yourself, you get a better deal from the post office.
And what is the thinking, though, as to why that dynamic should not apply to the internet?
Well, the concern here is, at least the concern that's expressed, is that the major companies that are now online, the big ones that are we know quite well, the Facebooks, the Google, the Amazons, and so forth, developed when we had no paid prioritization. And so the argument is that if we allow for this, it's the big companies that have the larger financial resources will be able to get it, will have better service than those that are trying to get on. And so if we want to have equality in terms of access and make sure that the internet is open and free for new providers, new innovators, that we have to do this, that we have to eliminate paid prioritization. That's not necessarily an argument that all economists would agree with, but that's the basic argument being made.
Steve Wildman and Johannes Bauer of the Michigan State University College of Communication Arts and Sciences join us to talk about the FCC rule from last week regarding the open internet. Dr. Bauer, about a year ago, you co-authored a paper that appeared in a periodical called The Information Society. In that report, you indicated that there is, and I'll quote here, no single policy instrument that allows realization of the range of valued political and economic objectives simultaneously. Are we to understand then that it's going to take more than a decision by the FCC to reclassify broadband as if it were a public utility to ensure that the internet is distributed and consumed equitably?
That is correct. I mean, in this article that you refer to, we actually distinguish two larger sets of goals. One set of goals is related to the freedom of speech. The other set of goals is related to the economic goals of investing in a modern infrastructure. And many of the stakeholders in the discussion overly simplified the discussion. The proponents of net neutrality saw it as a fix-all measure that would then lead to free speech, high investment, higher download speeds, lower prices, and so forth.
Whereas all good.
All good, right? But the reality is, and the few observations that we have from other places where there is net neutrality in place, for example, the Netherlands, indicate that not much along those lines actually happened. True, the openness provisions that are currently adopted, they will protect the openness of the freedom of information, the free flow of information. They will not necessarily increase the speed of access, and they will not necessarily reduce the prices of service. These are sort of factors that will depend to a large degree on the degree of competition in those markets, and the current order will only affect that degree marginally, is my expectation.
But you implied there would be other policy instruments in your article or the paper that you co-wrote. What other policy, where might these policy instruments be? Where would that come from?
So we argued, for example, that it is desirable, for one, to have no blocking rules in place. It is also desirable to have certain non-discrimination boundaries in place that would avoid overly partisan types of intervention in that network infrastructure. We didn't necessarily think that the current set of rules was the best way of doing this. But what we argue is that these rules are not necessarily sufficient to achieve those goals. So freedom of speech, a vibrant political democracy online also depends on citizens that are engaged. It's not just dependent on having an open web. So there needs to be more. There needs to be education. There needs to be a sense that political participation is feasible. Likewise, investment into higher quality infrastructure is not just dependent on the openness of the web. It also depends on whether there's a business case. And unfortunately, to some degree, the neutrality rules weaken the business case of the investors in the network infrastructure because they will to some degree benefit from the ability to differentiate their services. Now, the current rules don't actually eliminate differentiation altogether. And we'll see how this will evolve in the marketplace. Historically, telephone companies could differentiate services, but they had to make those different classes of services equally available to different demanding parties.
Dr. Wildman, tell us about your time as chief economist at the FCC. Can you shed any light for us on the mindset of the board and its chairman, Tom Wheeler? What kind of board is this?
Well, I was maybe have the unique perspective of having served under three different FCC chairs. I came in under Julius Genachowski, who was there for 4 months. And then we had an interim chair, Minyum Clyburn. And I was only served under Mr. Wheeler for the last 3 weeks of my time there. Mm. And this is clearly a politicized process, but it's also one that is highly responsive to a lot of cross currents of thinking. And I have a lot of respect for the staff that's there. They're extremely highly qualified, very expert. On the other hand, they're also extremely overburdened, I think, by the total volume of work going through the agency.
Yeah, what, could you both comment, though, on the broadband company's fears that this creates more government oversight, and to whatever extent those are legitimate fears?
Well, I mean, there's no question it does create more government oversight. The new rules are created precisely for that reason. The biggest concern, I think, is with moving to Title II. And so Title II, as Johannes explained, is what was devised to regulate telephone companies 80 years ago. And those regulations evolved over time to be quite complex and also embedded, so it was difficult to get rid of them once we had them. Now, under Title II, you can forbear. And so the FCC has said they're forbearing on 27 different types of things that could be done under Title II. They're going to regulate only a few. But that doesn't mean that they can't go back and say, well, later on we've decided not to do that. In the past, we have set the Internet off to the side and said, these are things that government doesn't have discretion over. And so part of the concern is, well, as the political winds change in the future, will we end up with more regulation?
Mm-hmm. Johannes Bauer, MSU, is launching what it calls a net neutrality impact study. Both you and Dr. Steve Wildman will be involved, as well as other people on campus. What will be the main thrust of your study?
It is actually launched by Professor Bill Dutton at the Coelho Center for Media and Information Policy. Steve and I are both participating in it, as are other MSU researchers. Our goal is to provide nonpartisan and neutral information as to what the implications and the impacts of this new regulation are. We also want to more systematically collect information of what happened in other places that adopted net neutrality rules. Now, the problem is that the information is relatively limited because there's only a handful of countries that have similar net neutrality regulations in place. None of them actually as far-reaching as the American model. The problem is also—
So we are in the minority in the world?
In
terms of the open Internet?
The intensity of potential regulation that currently is in place is higher than in other places of the world, yes.
So tell us more about the study here. How will you translate your findings in a meaningful way to consumers?
Well, this is an extremely complicated space. It's a very dynamic, exponential technological environment. It's very difficult to sort out what the implication of a set of rules is on that bigger place. I mean, for one, all the players will adapt to the new set of rules very quickly. One of my fears, actually, is that the players will now take advantage of those common carriage rules that the FCC put into place and will try to play the policy game strategically to gain advantages, like they did in the past. Mm. And so it will not be easy to tease out what exactly the net effect, so to speak, of those regulations are, but we want to monitor, collect all the empirical evidence, collect qualitative evidence, conduct interviews and so forth to document what's happening.
We will leave it there. We want to thank both of our guests. Dr. Johannes Bauer is chair of the Department of Media and Information in the College of Communication Arts and Sciences here at Michigan State. Dr. Steve Wildman is also a professor in the Department of Media and Information. He's also the former chief economist for the Federal Communications Commission. Thanks to both of you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Pleasure to be here.